Hello, welcome to the Healing Dreams Project, exploring projective dream work for your health and wholeness with hosts Billy Ortiz and Dr. Royce Fitz. I am the producer, Viviana, and today we will explore one of Billy's dreams. Yay!
Hey, thank you. All right, so should I just dive right in?
Let's just dive right in.
Okay, this is a dream that I had November 18th of 2022. I titled it Marion Woodman, the Cowl Neck Dresses, and the Trip to Sister Carmen's. I'm with Laura Deal, and I'm helping her prepare for a presentation of Marion Woodman at a church in Denver. Some clothes have been donated, and it seems like some of them are directly from Marion Woodman herself. They are simple cowl neck dresses and fit loosely. I tell Laura it's best that she wears more solid colors than prints. Oh, I lost my place. Okay. Marion Woodman is there in person, and she's wearing a dusty blue cowl neck sweater dress. I tell her it's beautiful. I tell Marion that I like clothes like this that don't pinch or scratch, so I feel comfortable. I help Laura select three solid color dresses and one floral print. I tell her that prints will look too busy on camera. Then I ask a man there at the church if they have a VHS player. He says they do, and I think of the videotapes that I lent to Laura for her preparation, wondering if maybe we can use them for the presentation. There's a scene where I'm with Laura and we go to Sister Carmen's, as Laura has items to donate. One woman comes up and asks us if we speak English. Then she mentions that one of the items, a vacuum cleaner, is from the 1980s, and there seems to be some issue with that. However, they take the donation anyway. In the dream, Sister Carmen's is right next door to my house, so I grab some things from my home to donate as well, and Laura is surprised because she did not realize that my house was so close. And I tell her that the man who runs the place is there frequently, and we visit often. Now we are at the church where the workshop and presentation will take place. The people have not arrived yet because it's early and we're just checking things out. I show Marion where Jeremy and I used to facilitate dream groups, and how one time we split the group apart, and I show her each space. I tell her that I met Jeremy at Naropa, but I would often attend workshops with Jeremy that Jeremy facilitated at this church before we started working together. Then the technician at the church plays one of the VHS tapes, and it looks as though it has been corrupted because all the images are very grainy. I'm very concerned since I know I cannot replace them. Then it seems as though they make adjustments and somehow the images appear more clearly after a few minutes. Then Marion starts reciting a T.S. Eliot poem. I said to my soul, be still and wait without hope. And I start to recite Rilke. I'm too alone in the world. End of dream.
So I'm imagining listeners that don't know these people, and what a outrageous and bizarre dream. And it's like, I have been sometimes listening to dreams from dream groups, and people act like, you know, that everybody is supposed to know everybody else in the dream. Mm-hmm. And it's very disturbing and unsettling and annoying. And so my first thought is, my projection, I need to know who the hell these people are.
Sure.
Because in the dreamer's language and the dreamer's world, this flows like a beautiful, you know, little river, like a brook. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so like, come on, what's going on here?
So
who are these people?
Who do you want to know about first?
Well, let's talk about Marion Woodman. I mean, she's the star of my dream.
Exactly. Okay, Marion Woodman is one of my heroes. She passed away in 2018. She started out as a drama and English teacher in Canada and did that profession for about 20 years and then had sort of a break in her late 40s, early 50s, where she went into Jungian analysis and it really cracked her open. And she ended up being so moved and transformed through the process that she decided to travel to the Jung Institute in Switzerland and become an analyst herself. So
this is Carl Jung.
The Jung Institute, yeah. So she had a therapist. I think his name was Bennett or something like that, and he helped her to. She suffered from anorexia, and so through the process of her analysis, she discovered many things and really fell in love with the Jungian psychology model. And so she traveled. She decided to quit her job and travel to the Jung Institute and train to be a therapist herself. So one of the reasons I really admire her so much is that she just did this major life change right in her midlife. You know, it's quite amazing. She wrote a number of books. I don't remember exactly how many, but she also co-wrote a number of books as well. She partnered up with Robert Bly, and this is how I got to know who she was, because I love the study of fairy tales. And they put together a book called The Maiden King, which is based on, there's a Russian fairy tale originally called The Maiden Tsar. And so Woodman and Bly did a number of workshops where they would actually embody the characters of the fairy tale. And then from the transcripts of those workshops, they put together this amazing book. And I got really involved in it at some point when I was doing heavy research with fairy tales. And I learned a lot about Marion and learned a lot about Robert Bly. And then started, you know, sort of branched out from there and learned more about their work. She helped a lot of people, men and women who suffered from anorexia, helped them to recover. Okay. Mm-hmm. And that's the best I can say with her background.
Well, she's a legend in Jungian world, in the world of Jung psychoanalytic psychotherapy analysts and stuff. And Robert Bly is a world famous, you know, he died, 5-10 years ago, not that long ago.
No, really, just recently, 2019, 2020.
Yeah. And he was aged when he was doing these workshops, and he was known for raising men's consciousness, dealing with the male psyche and the wounded male psyche, and especially in the 80s and 90s, he was incredibly. So Marion Woodman worked with him.
Right.
And yeah.
So. That was one of her claims to fame, that she was actually invited to speak at the men's conferences, which, kind of like, wow, you know, she's a woman. Yeah, but that was, she broke that barrier. And that's when, Bly, for the men's conferences, he worked with James Hillman and Michael Mead, and it was Robert Bly's big book was Iron John, which is about accepting that wild masculine archetype within every man. So
a lot of show notes that are going to need to be added to this.
Definitely.
With all of these famous people.
Yeah.
Inside my dream. Did I ever meet Marion Woodman?
Unfortunately, no, I never met. I met Robert Bly. And I did go to one of his conferences at Ghost Ranch in the late 90s. I went to two.
Ghost Ranch, New Mexico.
Yes, in Abiquiu, New Mexico. And Georgia O'Keeffe's ranch, as some people call it.
It was her ranch.
Yes. Yeah. So, you know, I had a great opportunity to meet Robert Bly, work with him directly for two intensive weekends. Unfortunately, I never crossed paths with Marion. I have to say, though, when I used to commute back and forth from Lafayette to Boulder for many years, I always had to have something interesting to listen to in the car. And so I listened to hours and hours and hours of lectures of Marion Woodman. And so I absorbed a lot of her wisdom and humor. She was a real witty, feisty woman. So I had a lot of respect for her.
And so she appears in my dream, and then our amazing friend Laura Deal is in the dream, and Laura's doing what?
Yeah, and see, this is, you know, this was so timely because so just to introduce the listeners to Laura Deal. Laura Deal's a very close friend of mine. One of the reasons we get along so well is,
and she was interviewed on our podcast.
Oh, that's early. Right. Yeah, right. That's right. She's an early episode, so you can look that up. Mm-hmm. She's a storyteller, a dream worker, author. We've worked dreams together for the past 20 years. She met Jeremy at the same time I met Jeremy at the same workshop at Naropa in Boulder. So we have that in common. She worked really closely with him and I worked really closely with them. So we have that in common as well. You know, Laura's just a very kind and direct. She's got a really direct way of dealing with things, which I admire. And she's a talented author and storyteller and dream worker.
She wrote one of her books she wrote, which I do not remember the title at the moment, but I would carry it around with me. And it was about dream work and metaphors and dream symbols. And it became a kind of an anchor book. So she was doing what with Marion in the dream? Yeah.
The title you're trying to think of is The Newcomer's Guide to the Invisible Realm. Is that the book you're referring to? Okay.
Yeah,
and she also has another great poetry book called Marbles. Mm-hmm. And she's actually dedicated a couple of poems to me. So that's very touching and hard, you know.
She's deeply in my psyche.
Yes. Yes. And she's also, because we're born at the same year, that's another reason that we resonated as friends so much, because it's like, you know, we remember our childhood history is very similar. Oh yeah, that happened then and that happened then. So the reason that it was timely was because just recently it was released, the conversation with, I'll back up. Laura decided she took on this project with North Dakota Humanities, where they offer a Chautauqua and chat where people are can embody and impersonate a famous person and not only give their history and speak about their lives, but then later there's a question and answer period where the person has to actually answer as Marion Woodman or Walt Whitman or Carl Jung, whomever it might be. So back up a whole year ago, Laura, just recently that happened in this January of 2023, she had the performance and I watched it. But when she first was thinking of who she wanted to impersonate, she was first thinking of Georgia O'Keeffe. And we were having dinner, it was just an evening with close, you know, just me and Patty Ashley and Laura Deal, and we're just talking. And I said, you know, if it were me, I would impersonate Marion Woodman. And she was like, oh, really? Why? And so I said, well, you know, and I told her why and all the things I just said, how much I admired her. And I said, also, I have a lot of library materials that I can lend you, you know, audiobooks and videotapes and books and all kinds of stuff. And she said, okay, great. So she came over to my house and she kind of thought it over. And finally, she came over to my house and I sent her off with like a banker's box full of just anything you can imagine. And so she spent an entire year absorbing and studying Marian's life, and it just all came to fruition just a week ago when we got to see the performance. So so when this dream came, November, she was at that crux point of like, I got to really get this, you know, because it's, you know, I'm going to have the performance in a couple of months. So it just all seemed like almost like a visitation for Marian, like, we're happy that you're doing, I'm happy you're doing this.
Something about the Chautauqua piece, Colorado, Nebraska, South Dakota, North Dakota, Kansas, to some extent, other states, fund a program through their humanities departments, usually through their public radio or some humanities aspect of their state government. And they promote the Chautauqua programs. And what I remember is that North Dakota contracted with Laura, mm-hmm. and asked her, or she applied, whatever. But this is a big deal. This is where a person becomes, in this sense, Marian Woodman. She mm-hmm. becomes her and acts as her, talks like her, dresses as her. And so this is a deep incarnation of Marian Woodman. And so in my dream, I'm coaching my lovely friend Laura and providing support. And for me, it's like there are no boundaries really in the dream world between myself, Marian, and Laura, and maybe the other characters that appear in the dream. So I just wanted to kind of lift that up for the listener to see how deeply and psychically powerful this is, both in the waking world as well as in the dream world about this. And for me, it's like, yes, Marian Woodman is alive and well, giving her insights through with the people in my dream through me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it is a big deal. It was so much work, and it went on for the entire year. And there was a lot of mentoring and coaching and practicing and to get to that point. And I think Laura's performance was spectacular. I mean, it was just unbelievable. I was like, wow, because she even took on some of her mannerisms and speech and, you know, idiosyncrasies and things. So that was what made it seem real. It seemed like, okay, this is Marian. I loved it.
Just have a question. What is Sister Carmen?
Okay, Sister Carmen's is the local charity in the city where I live here in Lafayette, Colorado. They're very helpful to those in need. There's a thrift store and also a food bank. And I've donated many items to Sister Carmen's over the year. I've shopped at Sister Carmen's. I've sent people there, like, if you need help, go to Sister Carmen's. And it's a charitable organization here in Lafayette.
Was it founded by somebody named Carmen?
It was there actually was a Sister Carmen. And I don't remember her whole story, but that was back in like the late 70s, I believe.
And so am I in the waking world connected to this organization?
I'm not really connected to them. It's sort of like the quickest, easiest place to go drop off clothing and shoes and items, you know, household items and stuff that you don't need. And it's very close to my house. And like I said, just for years, that's where I take things for donation. It's funny because that other dream I worked where we were in the the one about the Donna shrinking, and I was in the underground storage, and again the donation thing came up, like I wanted to donate all the items, and I thought about that, and I thought that's a theme that's interesting. Show up more than once.
How often do I donate in my life?
Oh gosh, you know, probably every 3 months or so. And I think I said this before, but my husband sort of he often calls my car the moving garage sale, because I always throw things in there like, okay, I'm going to donate this, I'm going to donate this, I'm going to donate. And then eventually it gets to the place where it's supposed to be donated.
And then at the end, what is my relationship with T.S. Eliot and Rilke?
Okay, that poem that I'm referring to, Rilke, that's probably one of my very favorite poems of all time. And I memorized it a long time ago. And it's very powerful because of the way that it speaks to my heart. And T.S. Eliot, I don't know as well, but I know it's interesting because I have seen Marion Woodman in certain interviews and certain situations where she just quotes Eliot like off the top of her head. And that was also one of Jeremy's favorites as well.
And this is where my dream ends.
Yeah. Well, she starts there's that particular poem is my favorite Eliot poem. I said to my soul, you know, it's a very, said to my soul, be still and wait without hope. And so she starts saying it, you know, just reciting it. And then so that in the dream, it's like, oh, I think, oh, well, I know a poem. So I just start to say, you know, it's sort of like a poetry jam at the end. And that's how it ends.
I love that.
Viviana, you were going to say something and I stumbled over you, I think.
No, I already said what I wanted
to
ask.
Okay.
I mean, my other question would be Naropa.
Yes, thank you.
And then qualities of Jeremy as well.
Okay, well, Naropa is a Buddhist university here in Boulder, Colorado. It's
the only freestanding Buddhist university in North America.
There you go. Thank you. See, Royce has got the real, you know, the specific information that we need. Yes, the only freestanding Buddhist university in the United States. They are very well known for their writers program and a lot of different things. But lately, I've known so many more people that have graduated with the transpersonal contemplative type psychology training. And the reason Naropa comes up is because that when I was first getting into dream work and Dr. Ron said, there's these books you need to read by this man named Jeremy Taylor. And I took home the book Dream Work and I got so involved in it. And I thought, boy, it's like this man is speaking to me. And I was very excited about that. But then one day I'm walking downtown in Boulder and I pick up a Naropa catalog and open it up to the page of Jeremy Taylor's picture. And it says, oh, I'm like, really, this guy, I'm reading his book and he's going to be here in town and he's going to have a workshop. And that's sort of where everything began for me with the projective dreamwork model, because I went to that workshop in 2000. Laura Deal attended as well. So it's one thing we have in common too. In fact, other people I know very well now were at that same work, sort of a nexus point of all the dream workers in Boulder County. And so I mentioned—
Only in Boulder could this happen.
Really, exactly. It's such a Boulder thing. Like there's a Buddhist university that invites— Please. Jeremy Taylor. And so anyway, it was a really huge moment in my life because I can trace everything back to that workshop, to how my life changed afterwards.
So there's a couple things that stand out again for facts for me to understand this dream. It may not matter to the listener. It matters a lot in my dream. that Chautauqua has a deep heritage on the prairie, and it originated in northern New York, but there was a movement that came out west to educate and to introduce prairie people who were supposedly very unsophisticated and isolated to the stories of the world. And they brought debates, they brought drama, they brought Shakespeare, they brought Sunday school lessons. Mm-hmm. You know, it was originally started, I believe, by the Methodist Church, a certain arm of that, as a ministry to prairie, generally white prairie people. You know, we need to own that. And uh-huh. and so in the modern day Chautauqua movement, Laura is mm-hmm. a part of this. And in my dream, this Chautauqua shows up. Now, there's another piece that is important to me, because in the dream, I'm at a church where all of this is going on. And I'm curious about the dreamer's association with church, with that church. Is that a waking life church?
It's interesting because it hints at the First Divine Science Church in Denver, downtown Denver, which again is a place that I can say I can trace back to how my life changed from that moment forward. Because after I had my business relationship with Dr. Ron and things kind of fell apart, and I left that business relationship in February of 2002, and then I went underground or out of picture for 9 months, which was not the symbolism of which does not escape me. And then I got to the point where, you know, I can't just give up on dream work just because this business relationship didn't work out. I still love dream work. And so some friends came over and to my office, they said, Billy, you know, let's just work on dreams and we don't have to, nobody has to be in charge or anything. They sort of pulled me out of my shell, and I decided, okay, I love this too much. So I'm going to have to go online and see on Jeremy's website where he's going to be next. And I saw that he was going to be in Denver, October of 2002.
And he was living in California at the time,
right?
As always, actually. But
yes, so I said, "Wow, that's great." So there's this story. I'm not going to tell it all right now, but there was a lot of obstruction that for me to get to the actual church. I had been inspired because I had a dream called Dream Camp, which I wanted to. It inspired me to create the retreats, which I still run to this day, 20 years later. But I wanted to talk to Jeremy at that workshop to tell him my idea and say, you know, let's do this and I'll put together, I'll promote it and we'll get a group going together and we'll do a dream camp. You know, this is what I was inspired. So that church that shows up in the dream is very similar to the First Divine Science Church in downtown Boulder, downtown Denver. Which was another place that I connected with Jeremy frequently, and that was where the birthing of the Dreamwork retreats happened there. So it's a slightly different, as the dreams tend to do. It's a little more updated. It's a little more slick. I mean, the first, I don't know, this church that I remember at downtown, you know, it's an older building, so it's kind of funky and different things, plaster coming off the wall here and there. Nice place, but still, you know, in the dream, it's a little more finished and polished.
Which in my dream is beautifully symbolic of how my soul is.
Well, thank you.
And I'm talking about my dream, not yours. Yeah.
Very briefly, just a couple descriptors of Jeremy.
Hi. So many things.
Brilliant.
What?
Go ahead.
Brilliant dream worker, compassionate soul, social activist, defender of all those who are underprivileged, weak and poor, funny, tough. Mm-hmm. Great sense of humor and brilliant.
Okay.
And I've heard the dreamer often talk about that, and this is true in my projection, a kind of a big brother slash daddy slash, for me, a priest mm-hmm. of dreams. Mm-hmm. You know, this unique blending of so many things, and these are all projections. And I know Jeremy right now is saying, yeah, what you see in me is in thee. So in my dream, it's mm-hmm. like all of the above is true.
Yeah. Yeah. I you've probably heard me say a lot too, and I've shared this, I think, on the podcast as well. I had a long period of time where I dreamt about Jeremy nearly every night. I mean, this was when I first, mm-hmm. my projections were very strong in the beginning because he did and does hold all of those positive masculines that you're mentioning. You know, he was like a father figure and like a big brother and a good uncle, and Patty Ashley used to call him my work husband, you know, because we were so close, you know.
that's a good one.
Yeah, because yeah,
I haven't heard that one.
And it's true, because I mean, it was like, you know, we were just super close and you know, often had our arm around each other, or, you know, gentle touching and stuff was just totally natural.
Mm-hmm. I'm listening to the descriptors of Jeremy, and at the same time, I'm looking at this poem by Rilke. Mm-hmm. And I just want to quote, just because my eyes went right to it, "I want to mirror your image to its fullest perfection. Never be blind or too old to uphold your weighty, wavering reflection."
That's a different translation than I'm from. The Bly translation is a little bit different than that. But I, yeah, it's the same kind of feeling. It's like, I'm too alone in the world, but not alone enough to make every minute holy. I'm too tiny in the world, but not tiny enough to lie before you like a thing, shrewd and secretive. I want my own will, and I want simply to be with my will as it goes towards action. And in the silent, sometimes hardly moving times, when something is coming near, I want to be with those who know secret things or else alone. I want to be a mirror for your whole body, and I never want to be too blind or too old to hold up your heavy and swaying picture. I want to unfold, because where I'm folded, there I am a lie. And I want my grasp of things true before you. I want to describe my being, give me a second. I want to describe myself like a painting I looked at closely for a long time, like a saying I finally understood, like the picture I use every day, like the face of my mother, like the ship that took me safely through the strongest storm of all. That's something like, I missed it at the end, but yeah, that's it. I didn't have that kind of emotion come up with that for a while. Mm-hmm. But it's like an anthem, you know, it's like, this is who I am. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's a thank you for looking that up, Viviana. It's I'm particularly drawn to the translation that Bly has, and there, you know, there's a number of them. It's kind of like with Rumi too, you have to, I prefer Coleman Barks' translations, but you know, they're, it's just what you get used to when you get used to remembering.
It's what my soul bonds with. This is where I come out of the egg, and I have this impression. And there are other beautiful people around, beautiful poems, beautiful translations, and yet the one that I see first when I come out of the egg, that's what I bond with. And so it tends to define, this is inscribed upon my soul.
Yeah.
You know, Viviana, please jump in. Don't raise your hand, just yell, please. This dream is huge. For me, this is overwhelming. There are so many people, so many characters, so much action, so many elements. And in some ways, if I had a microscope, I could look at a tiny section or scene or a part of a scene, and I would gain much about the beauty and healing that this dream holds for me. The dream just kind of rushes out of the pipe, gushes with scripturally with living water, so much here. And and I'm imagining myself as a listener thinking, you know, what the hell is all of this? What is this about? because there are so many people and major events inside this dream.
Right.
And so it can be flooding my soul with, you know, the living water. And I have, it's hard for me to breathe. And I'm, you know, gasping for air as I try to drink of all of this living water. So as I stand back, if I can get on the riverbank and look at this dream from a little bit of a distance, part of what this says for me is I stand on the riverbank of dreams. Hey, that sounds like a fun title for something. The riverbank of dreams.
I love it.
Yeah. There are men and women in this dream and institutions. So I feel balanced that Marion Woodman, who is in a sense the core of the dream that myself is imagining, represents a way to bridge the elements of my life and in the waking worlds too. It's because this dream is more than just me. She represents a way to articulate my strong feminine self. And as I do that, as I have this balance that I know I am feminine at my core, I also have the experiences, the tentacles of touching all of these male energies and these institutional energies.
Right.
And so I feel balanced. And so in November 18th, whenever that is, it's both the past, present, and future. Acknowledgement of my deep work that I've done and what has, you know, I am the culmination of Marianne Woodman's work. This is why she's in me. This is why she's come into the world. And I know I'm not the only one she is gifting this to. That doesn't matter. I know I am gifted with what I project upon her, and that I'm looking in her eyes, and she mirrors me. She mirrors me.
Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you. Yeah, she was a trailblazer. That's for sure. I mean, she worked tirelessly for women's equality and rights, and especially for allowing women to express their true nature, not without feeling less than or second citizen, you know. So that I respect her for that a lot. But you're right, you know, when we admire people, it's that, I know, and it's interesting, Jeremy doesn't actually appear. I mean, I talk, you know, which is a nice change from the previous projections. So there's, you know, there's I'm talking to Marion in the dream about, yeah, we used to meet in here. And then we had this other time where, you know, we had this extra group and we had to split them out over here. And I'm kind of giving her the tour. There's nobody there. It's empty. But so I'm talking about Jeremy and referring to when we worked together, but he does not appear in the dream. So there's something very different about that energy of like, and, you know, and here's where we get into that whole thing that we've discussed so many times. When is it really a visitation dream? And when is it both? I think it's mostly both and. And I had a couple of very interesting things happen after Laura decided to take on the Woodman character after my suggestion. She always says, it's all your fault, Billy. It's all your fault. Because it was, you know, I was the one who suggested it. But we had things like one time, I have a recording on my iPhone of one of her audiobooks through Sounds True. And I would just pick up my phone and it would start playing Crown of Age with Marion Woodman, and her voice would start booming across. And I go, well, I didn't, how in the world did that turn on? And this happened a number of days in a row. And it always would start out with this, you know, very loud, pompous music at the beginning. And my husband would go, what is that? I said, every day we get this every morning. And I was like, all I did was pick up my phone. And it would just be that preamble of the beginning of that first part of the audiobook. That happened for quite a while. And then Laura had a few instances too, where she'd get in her car and suddenly the tape would start playing, and it would be at a place that she was just talked about something to somebody else about Marion's life. So we had a number of those things happen, and Laura and I kept talking about, wow, I think she's on the other side. She's given us the go ahead and showing us that she's listening. I found that really magical. So I mean, that's one of the reasons I liked this stream so much. I wanted to bring it.
What is the significance of blue for me?
Yeah, that's very specific in the dream.
Dusty.
Yeah, dusty blue. It's like a light blue. I like that color. I mean, it's not a color I wear that often. I've had a few things that color. Well, it's one of those places of paradox. I mean, blue can be peaceful and serene, but it also hints at depression when it shows up in dreams. So this is not a dark, dark blue, though. This is a very light, like I say, dusty blue, which I can't think of anything I would use as an example, but yeah.
And then a cowl neck sweater dress, mm-hmm. Also very specific.
That's a real 80s kind of thing. You might be too young to know this, but there was the cowl neck and Royce can relate to the cowl neck being.
I'm not that old.
Well, I know. Yeah. But I mean, like the monks have the cowl, you know, where you can put the cowl over the head and it wraps around the face and then covers the neck. And so there was a trend in the 80s, I'm sure you remember this. It was just like there were so many cowl neck dresses. You know, everybody had, you had a sweater, you usually had a neck that came down low and like you could pull it up if you wanted to. You could pull it up over your face, but you wouldn't, of course, do that. But it was just the style. And that's what shows up in the dream. So it's another spiritual reference. If you find the origination of what a cowl is, it has to do with the monks covering.
Yeah, especially since it's a sweater dress. Yeah, that very much. I love how that makes a gentle reference to the cloak of a spiritual person.
Right.
And then the three solid colors, what colors were they? Any?
Gosh, I'll see if I can remember. Well, one of them is well, see, that's what's odd. It's very dreamlike because the dusty cowl neck dress that Marion's wearing is also something that is being donated. So it's almost like there's it's there and then it's on her as well. And Laura actually she found a cowl neck dress in her storage and she ended up a dusty blue color and she ended up wearing it for the presentation.
What?
But, yeah, I know.
Did you discuss this dream with her?
Yes, we did. She actually worked the dream with her. And then she goes, I'm going to go I went through my search. She says, look, she sends me a picture. She goes, look what I found. And then she ended up wearing that and then Laura was very surprised about the T.S. Eliot poem because she had decided to end her presentation with that particular poem. I did not know that when I had this dream. So there again, it's one of those Marion Woodman, let's help these women out. they're doing good jobs to spread the word. And I can't remember the other one. I think, okay, let me think. The other one that's solid color, I would describe it as a dusty rose. So it's kind of like a light pink. When I say dusty, meaning it sort of like has that sort of chalky kind of look, you know, like it's not a solid complete color. It's kind of like faded. And then there's one, the last one that is a floral print is the one that I tell Laura, I would not wear this one on camera because it's too busy, but it's still beautiful. It's just like big kind of irises on a pattern on the dress. But they're all the same shape and they all have the same kind of neck.
Isn't the iris the part of the eye that makes that we see clearly with?
I don't know enough about I don't know. I think like the lens of the eye.
Or it's the color. Maybe it's
it's
color.
It's the color of the eye, I believe.
Okay.
Where am I going, Viviana, in my dream?
I'm gathering information, and if it were my dream, dusty blue for me would be, well, the fact that I live in Colorado, which can be deserty, dusty, and it's almost like, and this is an 80s, a dress from the past. So it's a cloak that I used to wear. In the dream, I'm picking out new dresses, new cloaks, new masks to wear. And one that's not blue, one that is rose. And for me, the color of red, dusty, is the color of the heart. So it's almost like blue for me is more head space. And I'm graduating into more the color of the heart. And flowers are always something of beauty for me, but it's also short beauty.
Yeah, that's true.
It's just beauty for a little time.
Yeah. Right. I love it doesn't last very long at all. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there's also the fact that there's a VHS player, which is another relic from the past, right?
Yes.
And so it's like I'm diving into my life as it was, and then it's almost like a graduation dream in that I'm bringing in, it's all about donations as well. Yeah. So I'm letting things go.
Again.
The vacuum cleaner also from the 80s.
Oh, right.
So, yeah. So I'm getting rid of this 80s persona that I was, yeah, and moving into this new realm of the positive, what do you always call it? The positive mirror that is Marion and Jeremy and Laura. This combination is what is my new, what I'm moving into. So it's like a, almost like a graduation dream, if it were my dream, in that I'm letting go of the past and my past. And Naropa. I love that Naropa came up, and also the Ghost Ranch, which are both places where people work on their book. So this is a gentle nudge to on my book, if this were my dream.
Wait, the dream world is still voting for that, huh? Yes. Thank you. That's great. Yeah, a lot of 80s references for sure.
So this helps me as I'm listening, this is a summation. I loved how this in Viviana's dream, which is my dream, that I end up noticing that the dream world is calling me to write. That now I am of age. Now I am of a certain soulful space and place in my life that I'm ready to share this in new ways through writing, perhaps through poetry.
Poetry.
Yeah. Well, it ends. I know it ends. It ends with two poems. And now that I think about it, there's Laura's a writer. Marion was a big writer. Jeremy, of course, was a writer. So, oh gosh.
Yeah. What am I not seeing here? Right.
Exactly. Ding, 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 ding.
Yeah.
And so where a dream ends to me is always important, how this dream ends. And I end it in my memory. I end this dream abruptly with this poem, part of a poem. Mm-hmm. And it speaks, my memory is a little short here, but did I end it with the word alone?
Yes.
I'm too alone in the world. Yeah, that's the first line of Rilke.
Where the dream ends for me, right, with that. So that really touches me. Speaks of my existential and waking life aloneness that is sometimes really prominent. And this is also a gift of being ready to use aloneness to, you know, the aloneness is a gift to the world, to some extent through my own sorrow, my own anguish, my own expansiveness and love. I am alone to share this.
Mm. Wow. Thank you.
That pulls up for me I have to be alone to write. Mm-hmm. It's a very solitary thing to do.
Well, Royce knows me very well. I'm just fine being alone. You know, I'm one of those extreme introverts. I mean, that's one of the things that I was talking with Laura the other day.
And just don't get her to start talking, because these introverts, when the treasure chest is open, they just go.
It's
all
so
of that
true.
Stuff that's been stored up. So, and this is why I need to write. Yeah. I do have a treasure inside me, you know, inside my chest, and it's time to share this.
Yeah.
I think I interrupted both of you, but I wanted to be ornery.
Well, it's just you're right. It's one of those things, you know, it's like that we, as introverts, we live very much in our own world and we're happy with our own thoughts, and we don't need any, we don't receive energy from, We like people now and again, but it's like we don't receive our energy from others. We receive our energy from our inner cookings and workings and thought processes. And so, yeah, it's you're right. Once you get them Billy, how do you feel about it? Well, let me tell you. And I've been thinking about it for like a long time. So it's really stewed up in there, and I have a lot of things to share. You're correct. It's time to get the work done. How many dreams do I have to have about this?
Well, so I need to say, because I cannot say this for myself, I need to say this for myself in the dream and in the dreamer. The dream, I don't feel like, is giving me a should that I should write.
Right.
The dream is giving me the blessing of acknowledging all that I know, and that the world somehow is yearning to hear, to experience that which I know. And it's personified to some extent through Marion Woodman's, what I project upon her, what I know of her, what she knows of me.
Yeah.
It's not a should. This is a
right.
A yearning and some kind of acknowledgement that that the world needs who I am.
A calling.
Oh boy.
A calling. Amazing. Thank you. There.
Yeah, I love how there's a point at which it looks as though it's been corrupted or things are very grainy. It's almost like maybe in the past it wasn't ready to put words on paper. And now I just made tweaked it a little bit, made some adjustments, and somehow the images are appearing more clearly.
Yeah.
So just take it's a call for me. If I take that lens and adjust it just a little bit, and with a lot of alone time that I have, I think I just need to focus. I would use this as an urging, a gentle nudge to adjust the lens, spend more time alone, and put all of this on paper.
Mm-hmm.
Especially,
what does this feel like as a dreamer?
For me,
wow.
Well, it's another damn dream about the book. That's how it feels first. But what's coming to me now too is one of my first projections on Marion was how she made this drastic life change in her 50s, and I just turned a week and a half before the stream, I turned 61. So the message there is that it's never too late. It's always time. There's always time to pick up and do what you're called, what I'm called to do. There's a lot of spiritual references. That was one of the first things I noticed. The first being the cow neck thing, and I've dealt with this before in other dreams. That's an ancient reference to the calling of removing oneself from daily life and living the monastic life. You know, the
hermit,
being away from the hustle and bustle of the world and committing to the calling. And then, you know, of course there's the church, and then Naropa's mentioned, and then Sister Carmen's, that's another spiritual reference, because that's a spiritual organization that helps the needy. So there's a ton of spiritual reference. And then it ends with, of course, Eliot and Rilke's poems, both of which are talking about who am
aloneness.
I?
Aloneness.
Well, who am I? Yeah, aloneness, but also who am I really in the world? And does anyone really get who I am? And
mm-hmm. That's what I said, aloneness. I am so unique, I'm alone, right. And the world is still yearning for me. Mm-hmm. And as I was listening to the reflections on the cowl, the other aspects of some version of spirituality, conscious spirituality, all of this is spiritual. There may be more that is conscious spirituality, and yet they're all linked. I had this sense of my shamanic spirit. Sometimes the shamanic one does not live in with the tribe, in the village, in the clan. It is somewhat separate physically, as a way to, well, because I am alone as a shaman. I'm in the world and not, let's see, how does the scripture go?
Of the world, yeah.
I'm in the world, but not of the world. And you know, how do I walk like that? How do I live like that? Right. How do I write like that? How do I have joy like that? How do I be with and not of? Those are the pains and the struggles of the shamanic soul. And again, lifting up how I experience Viviana's words, this is what I can write about.
Yeah. Wow. Well, thank you guys. It's a lot in here. Mm-hmm. Knew it was a big dream.
Huge. I love the poetic references at the end. I'm now looking at T.S. Eliot's poem and how much of a paradox this particular poem is. Mm-hmm. And if, again, my projection as the underlying theme of the dream, I wonder, is what part of me is fears the aloneness, fears the writing, and at the same time embraces aloneness. Mm. And how can I embrace the writing?
Mm. Well, I think it's the projections that are the part that, you know, always is uncomfortable and makes me uneasy, is because once you put something out in the world and say, this is what I think about it, here it is on paper, there's a lot of projections that people make on that and say, well, you know, that's not the way I feel about it, or why would you say that, or what, you know, that kind of stuff. You know, I think there's some piece of, and then it's all about being worthy too, and who wants to listen to what I have to say, those kind of feelings, you know. But that's just those are insecurities that, are there, I'm sure, with everybody.
Well, the Marian in me overcame these insecurities. She overcame the securities. Thank you for the slip, Mr. Freud, because in some ways I'm too secure in my present, and I also am overcoming my insecurities because I'm branching into brand new areas, into the unknown. Mm-hmm. And at my age, and this is a way for me to not stop my dying process. I cannot do that. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to avoid that. I'm going to embrace my dying process and my aging, and this is what I can give to the world. This is the elder. This is the crone. This is the gift from those of us who are living to our dying day.
Mm. Yeah, beautifully said. Thank you.
With those paradoxes, I just want to read the last line of T.S. Eliot's poem that was quoted. So the darkness shall be light, and the stillness the dancing.
Yeah.
I just thought that was mirroring what Dr. Fitz was just saying.
Yeah. And the stillness of dancing. Yeah.
So let's, in my need to have some kind of closure with this, please repeat those words from T.S. Eliot again, and let's let that end this, if this that's okay, Billy.
Oh, I'd love it. Go for it.
Okay, let's just end for the listener and for us. Please say this.
So this is the last line of the poem that was quoted in My Dream by T.S. Eliot. So the darkness shall be the light, and the stillness the dancing.
Yeah. It's great. It's a exquisite piece of the whole thing. Oh, and, well, thank you.
And out of my old tradition, and the people say, amen.
Amen. Well, I think I'm ready to close this up, but thank you guys so much for everything. It was
beautiful.
It was a great, I could tell when I woke up, there's those dreams that you wake up and you go, wow, I've got to make sure to get this one down, every detail of it. And I mean, I was making little notes and scribbling on like napkins and stuff before I actually could get to where I could type it out. And I was blessed with like three pretty intense dreams just a few days apart. And so this one, but I had not had this level of recall for quite a while. I mean, to this depth of description and little fine details. So it was really a gift.
This is where I would want to pay particular attention to my dreams tonight. And for the next few days, and maybe have a moment of T.S. Eliot and Marion Woodman meditation.
Yes, yes, definitely. And Marion was a big T.S. Eliot fan, so you know that that makes sense. All right. Well, thank you guys. This was really wonderful, and there was a cathartic moment there for me that I was surprised by some of the emotion that came up. Recited that poem hundreds of times and not ever had that level of emotion come up. So that means that something's breaking open.
It is profound and transformational. Beautiful. Well, Billy, tell us about wakeuptoyourdreams.com.
Okay, well, I offer private sessions, and I also offer two groups, one that meets in the afternoons and one that meets in the evenings, and all the dates are up on the calendar on my website, wakeuptoyourdreams.com. I'm also hosting my next live in-person retreat in May of this year, May 5th through the 7th at Peaceful Meadow Retreat Center in Boulder. People are already signing up. And I also train and mentor individuals to become dream workers themselves through the Rocky Mountain Institute for Projective Dreamwork. And I just started the first, another round of training, and another new one will be coming up soon.
Wonderful.
And to the listeners, can you imagine working and learning about dream work with Billy after this deep, beautiful dream? Won't that just be out of this world, out of the dream?
Oh, thank you.
Mm-hmm. At a place called Peaceful Meadows.
Yeah. Sounds
perfect.
It is. It's very peaceful there. There, it's appropriately named.
I love it. Well, roycefitz.com. Tell us about what goodies will one find there.
Well, just to do a quick free association, stream of consciousness sharing, as hopefully the listeners can understand, we and I deeply love soul searching dream work. And on my website, if you were to go there, you can sign up for a free 30-minute consultation to begin the process to see if this kind of journeying and spiritual counseling and dream work is for you. So I encourage you, invite you to do that. And let's begin the gentle, loving conversation of what your dreams are holding for you. And speaking of books, this year in 2023, probably more towards the middle of the year, The Geography of the Soul, Dreams, what is my subtitle? Dreams, Reality, and the Journey of a Lifetime. That book will be coming out. And I invite you to go to the website and look at my intro to the book. And that is a bit of what I do in this world, the waking and the dreaming worlds.
Fabulous. Well, I'm the producer, Viviana, and my website is viviana.org, viviana.org. I'm primarily a musician, and at viviana.org/magic, I will have at some point my astrology/tarot/dream worker/sound healer persona will be there very, very soon. So you, the listener, if you have a dream for us, please, we encourage you to call the Dreamer Hotline. Yes, operators are standing by. The number is 720-573-9195. Tune into your dreams, write them down, incubate them before falling asleep, and share your dreams with us by calling it in. 720-573-9195. If you have enjoyed today's episode, we encourage you to share and like and expand with your friends, with your people, your circles, because as you expand your circles, it expands our circles and it keeps us going and motivated to talk about the language of stories, symbols, metaphors, and archetypes that appear in our dreams. Until next time. Happy dreaming!